Alrighty, so we'll start off. I'm going to say hopefully three or four Dvarteras and the Haggadah. Hopefully, I advise you guys to write some things down so you have something to say for the night of the Seder. They're nice thoughts, things that are negeah, things that I actually did not think you're going to pull through in the car like that. But good. So write down the notes. I wish it was Yosef, but alrighty, everyone stay tuned. Like we said, let's keep the chat box to things that are pertinent, questions that one might have on the actual things that I'm saying, and then I'll keep an eye on it. Anyways, let's start. We're gonna start with a few shorter Dvarteras, then maybe we'll go into a longer Dvartera. The first one is a Vart from Reb Shamshon Frel Hirsch, who discusses the etymology. Etymology means the origin of words, and he discusses the etymology of two words that are very, very related to each other, and yet they have two very different shrushim. And the word is nachla and yerusha, and nachla and yerusha are both different words commonly used to refer to our inheritance. Both words used for inheritance, things that we get kind of automatically. But he says, he points out, Reb Shamshon Frel Hirsch points out very interestingly that those two words, both referring to inheritance, have very two different shrushim. Nachla comes from the shayish of nachal, which is river, which is an easier understanding for us because you understand that when someone passes away, it just flows right down to you. You kind of automatically get that inheritance passed on to you without much effort on your part. Whether you were deserving, whether you weren't deserving, whether it was coming to you or it wasn't coming to you, the river just sends it down, goes downstream, nachla, you inherit it. But he says the word Yerusha comes from the Sheirish of Reshes. And Reshes, we know, is means a net or to trap or to capture, which seems to imply a positive action needed for this nachlo, this Yerusha, this inheritance that we're talking about. A completely different idea. Nachla, automatically. Yerusha, which comes from the shares of reshes, which means a net, which means to capture, which means you actually have to do something to get it. And he explains, he says that sometimes in Judaism, being part of Klal Yisrael, you have an automatic buy-in. You're automatically part of the nation of Klal Yisrael, you're automatically part of Am Yisrael. And even if you're not doing things actively, but you're still going to be part of it. You're still going to get tzchar. You're still going to get a lot of bonuses, just that. But he says, but it doesn't end there. There's an active part that we need to do in order to be part of it. And that's the Yerusha aspect. That's the Reshes. We actually have to capture our chelik. We actually have to take positive action to do our chelik, to get our chelik of Torah, our chelik of Ruchnis, our chelik of Klal Yisrael, that we each play a very specific and an important pivotal role for ourselves. And we could tie that in when we say that Ma'aseh Rabbi Elazar in the Haggadah, we say Ma'aseh Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azari, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon Shem, Sumim Bnei Brak, all these Gedolei Hadar, everyone was sitting in Bnei Brak, they were all darshaning. That's coming right off the idea that we said, Vafilu Kulanu Chachamim, Kulanu Nevinim, even if we were all wise and we're all Moslashim, and we all knew the whole Torah, meaning we know everything already. We're talking about the Gedolei Hadar, they know everything already. Nevertheless, whenever there's more, it's praiseworthy. Meaning, even if you're at a point where you might know everything, there's still an active part that you always have to be playing in Judaism. For us, we're definitely not holding on that level, but just understanding the concepts that they understood very clearly, that it's not just that they're holding at a certain point they can relax. They might have accomplished a great amount to be the Gedolei Hadar, but nevertheless that they're putting themselves in the position of Nachla. They still have to always have the aspect of Yerusha never goes away, and the aspect of Yerusha, which is Reshes, which is their positive involvement, is always something that you have to constantly be cultivating, and that's what they're saying, that even if they're the Gedolei Hadar, they still have to constantly be part of the of Klai, so I'll constantly do their active part of it. another var that I saw many, many years ago, just a nice knach from Shimshon Pinkas. I think he says it himself. Basically, later on in the Haggadah, we say, we start talking about Rami Avid Avi. We're saying, the story, what happened, how Klai Yisrael ended up in Mitzrayim. So it says, it says that Lavan was worse than Pari. Lavan wanted to completely destroy him. Pari Lagazar El Al Zacharim. Lavan Migish La'akhir Sakal. Lavan wanted to destroy everything. And then talks about Yaakov going down. And then the Baal HaGadah explains, brings the Pasuk, and the Baal HaGadah explains, Vayed Mitzrayim. I went out to Mitzrayim. And the Baal HaGadah explains, Anas L'Pi HaDibur. He was honest. He was forced by a Pi HaDibur, means from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, meaning he didn't really want to go. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, go down. So there's a famous story that happened when Yaakov went down. We're talking about Yaakov, that Yosef sent him the Agalus. Yosef, sent Ani Yosef. He's still holding the same Madrega. He didn't lose any of his Ruchnias. He sent the Agalus, which represented, that he's still holding Ruchnias, etc. And Yaakov is very excited. He hasn't seen him in 22 years. And finally, he's coming. Finally, he's coming down. And we have to understand the emotional state here was that until this point, Yaakov thought, they all knew, even the Imahus knew Baruch HaKodesh, that there's going to be 12 Shvatim. And Yaakov until this point thought that his whole life mission was destroyed by the fact that that one of the Shvatim disappeared. He thought that he failed. There's supposed to be 12, and now there's only 11. Until this point where he realizes he's alive, he realizes he's still holding, etc. So he's coming down to finally greet Yosef, who was, quote-unquote, his favorite from the beginning. And it says, then he gets down there and says, he said Kriya Shema. It says Yosef gave him a hug. And Rashi darshans, from the fact that it says Yosef gave him a hug and didn't say that he gave Yosef a hug. So he says, what was he doing? Why didn't he hug him back? Because he was saying Kriya Shema at the point. So the famous question is, that's the point he decided to say Kriya Shema at that one point. So there's a famous teretz that's given, which is that Yaakov Avinu had this incredible emotional state at that point when he finally saw Yosef HaTzadik, and he decided to channel it towards the Kadosh Baruch Hu and say Shema at that point. That's the famous part that a lot of us have heard. And Reb Chaim Brisker very strongly disagreed with that vart, because he said that if you're talking about us, that's one thing. If you're talking about the simpletons, that we need to use external situations to get us in the zone and to get us fired up and to get us spiritually connected to think about Hashem, and that, okay, fine, maybe, you know what I mean? Then that makes sense. There's a English expression, don't tar him with the same brush. Just because you paint us like that and you think that we're holding on that madriga, that we need external emotional things to get us to have a good tefillah, which we very often do, doesn't mean that that's Zakta Reb Chaim Brisker. That's not what Yaakov Avinu did. When Yaakov Avinu said Kriya Shema, he said it to the fullest every day. He said it with the full kavanah. He said it with the highest levels of concentration and connection. So what's Takap Shah? Why at that moment did he decide that's the exact moment that he needs to? So he said, the answer lays in these words of Aynis al-Pi Adibur. Aynis al-Pi Adibur means that he was forced to go down to Mitzrayim, because that was a tzivui Hashem. Hashem said, go down to Mitzrayim, and that's a tzivui. Meaning, there's a famous yisayid called Eisik min ha-mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah. And therefore, until this point, he was being Eisik in the mitzvah, the tzivui Hashem of going down to Mitzrayim. It was at this point, right when he got to Mitzrayim and Yosef was coming to greet him, his mitzvah is over. So now he has the chiv of Kriya Shema that he might have had from 2 hours ago. It wasn't at that moment, was the exact moment of Vasikin that he was able to say Shema. That was the moment that he discharged his chiv from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to go down to Mitzrayim. He stepped foot in Mitzrayim. Now he has the chiv of Kriya Shema. So he's going to do the next mitzvah on the list, which is Kriya Shema, which is a nice brisker vart. Moshe, you're missing tons and tons of spots. But I don't want the island to start bothering you, so I'm going to just do that, and we'll take care of that. Perfect. Okay. So that's the next thought. Second vart. The third vart is Mr. Goldberg Jr. I hope you're taking notes. That there's a nice vart which I thought was appropriate, a classic Lubavitch vart which I saw written B'Shem the Lubavitcher. And we say at the end of Beirach, we say a famous paragraph, which is Shleicha mascha al goyim, you know, pour your wrath on the goyim asher lo yedu'ucha, that don't know you, v'amalach asher b'shimcha lekro, and on the nations that don't call out to you, etc. So the Lubavitch Rebbe said, and I think it's a very important idea generally, but it's obviously it's a more up Lubavitch's creek this part, and that is that when we're saying Shvei Chamascha al Goyim, we're not saying it as a blanket statement of Shvei Chamascha al Goyim, just destroy the Goyim. We're saying Shvei Chamascha al Goyim, Ashelo Yiducha, that don't know you. Furthermore, Ramam Lachais, and on the nations, Asher B'Shimcha Leikro, that don't call out to you, meaning the ones that don't recognize you. And we find that when Klai so went out of Mitzrayim, and they go through the Kriyas Yamsuf and the Mitzrayim is destroyed and they come out and they're elated that that's the point that they actually were free, that their captors, meaning there's Stockholm syndrome, or if you want to go so far, but even not that, even the fear or the lack, quote unquote, of freedom. If someone is imprisoned by someone for many years or their entire lives, so these people were imprisoned their whole lives, and they go out and their masters are still alive and their slave owners are still alive, then they always have that fear when they see him or that idea or that notion. The only true chairs comes when their masters are destroyed. They don't exist. And that happened as soon as Klai Yisrael came out. Their owners and their whole nation that enslaved them is gone. So that's the point, that they're completely and totally broken free from any connection. And Klai Yisrael obviously starts singing the Shira, and they're excited and they're elated and they're channeling Tashem and they're davening fervor. And the Malchei Sharis begin singing also. They also start the Shira. And the Rebbe Shlomo famously says, "My siyada toivim bayam, batim ayim Shira." My people, my creations, are drowning the sea. And he's talking about the Mitzrayim. These are the Ervas Haaretz. These are the lowest, worst, most despicable people. And yet the Rebbe Shlomo has some sort of connection to them. Rebbe Shlomo has some quote unquote bad feeling that his creatures are being destroyed. So what's pshat? What's pshat? The pshat is that there's that the Rebbein Shlom's utopia of the world is not a world that has just Klai Yisrael, no one else. There is a very valid and fair and positive place for a guy to be in this world. And there's even something called the righteous among nations, as we know, which is not a Yad Vashem made up term. That's something that goes back from the times of Chazal, Chassidi Umas Ha'olam. And furthermore, I think there's maybe the most important point of this specific Dvar Torah, which is that we find many, many times that the Rebbein Shlom's whole mahalach of the Makos and the Tzias Mitzrayim and the Kriyas Yamsuf, the whole incredible Seder Hadvarim, was, as we say many, many times, so Klai Yisrael sees HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so Klai Yisrael has declared in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it's even more than that. It's even more than that. Because what does the Pasuk say? The Pasuk in Shemais Zayin Hei, the Pasuk says, V'yedu Mitzrayim k'ani Hashem. So Mitzrayim will know that I'm Hashem. V'netayisi es yadi al Mitzrayim. When I raise my hand to Mitzrayim, V'haytzi es b'nei Yisrael mitaychem. When I take out Klai Yisrael from amongst them. Meaning, What's Hashem saying here? That Mitzrayim's going to know? Mitzrayim's going to know that I'm Hashem? The answer is yes. Pasha Azai. The Rebbein Shlom wants the Goyim to know that he's Hashem just as much as he wants the Yidden to know. Maybe not just as much, but he wants Klai Yisrael obviously to know more. And there's many Pesukim saying that the point is that L'man Yedu Dar Yosechem, so the generations know and everyone knows and it's very, very clear. But L'maisa, give me one second. Anyways, I don't know the answer to your question, Yosef, if that was considered. But Lamaisa, Pashas it was, because the tzivoy was that they'll go down and they start counting the... Yosef asked me a question, is Goyshin considered part of Mitzrayim? Okay, we'll get back to that. But anyways, what we're saying here is that the pasuk in Shemai is telling us very clearly that just like we say many times, the Pesukim say that Klai Yisrael should know, it's also just important for Mitzrayim to know. Hashem wanted Mitzrayim to know. V'yedu Mitzrayim k'ani Hashem. So Mitzrayim should know that I'm Hashem. So the Goyim know. So again, it's a good understanding general understanding of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world looks like is that there's a place for the Goyim, and those Goyim are here to serve us, but not in a way that they're slaves and we'll be the masters. It's a utopian world where the Goyim realize that Hashem is the creator of the world, and there's people that were the Am HaNifchar, which we are, and they have a place, you know, with their Zion mitzvahs, etc., and that's what that's their place in the world. And that's the Rebbeinu Shlomo's ultimate goal, to have a functioning world that has many, many parts, and the Goyim and the animals and the Klal Yisrael obviously all recognize his shlita. So that's the Lubavitcher Rebbe saying, Shvech maschal Goyim, asher lo yiducha, don't know you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the ones that we want to destroy. But the other ones, obviously, they're obviously a pivotal, important part of the halachilich of the world. So that's the third vart. Again, let's just chazer over these things very quickly. The first thing we said was from Shem Shemfar Hirsch, the idea that there's something called Nachla and there's something called Yerusha, both referring to the idea of inheritance. And in what we're talking about is that there's part of Klal Yisrael, that we are automatically part of Klal Yisrael. There's a part that's Nachla that Shem Shemfar Hirsch says comes from the word Nachal, which is a river which comes automatically, and that's there's some parts of Judaism that we have automatically, but there's also a part of Yerusha which comes from Reshes, which comes from capturing, that we have to do an active part. That's how we explained, even if we're all chacham, we still have to take an active role of furthering our Yiddishkeit, of furthering our understanding as to whatever level we can. We said the next part of the idea of Einus al Pi HaDibur, that when he said Kriya Shema, was it to channel his emotional state? And the Reb Chaim Brisk said, no, that's maybe our type of understanding, but it's not Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu was Einus al Pi HaDibur. He was being Isaac with Mitzvah, and when he got to Mitzrayim, he was part from that mitzvah, so therefore he's able to begin the next mitzvah of Kriya Shema. And we just said this part of Shvecha Maschal Gem Shalai Ducha, that a big chalik of the whole Yitzias Mitzrayim was L'man Yedu Mitzrayim, that the Mitzrayim know, meaning that there's a critical aspect of the Bria for the Goyim to recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu in taking out of Mitzrayim, when he had that one time, as the Ramban in the end of Parshas Bayis says, the Rebbeinu Shlomo showed himself one time, and now we have to go back to that, because if he always shows himself, then there's no Bechira. He showed himself that one time, Pashas, you could say according to this, that was also to the Goyim. The Goyim also had that revelation. The Kriyas Yamsu was split everywhere in the world. Until HaMalek, oh, this is phenomenal, based on what I'm going to say soon, but basically until HaMalek, all the Goyim recognized Klal Yisrael as being the one. HaMalek went and suicidally seared, as Chazal said, they jumped into the boiling bath and burnt themselves just to cool it down. Crazily as that sounds, we'll explain that. It's a very simple understanding to that. But before HaMalek, all the Goyim recognized, because when HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed himself, as the Ramban says, he showed himself, everyone knows. It wasn't just for us. He didn't show us privately. He showed the whole world, because that's the critical gilu that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants for the whole world to be able to, you know, function as a productive, positive, workable world. That there's Goyim and there's Yidden and there's all the different aspects of it. That's what we say, Shvecha Maschal Al Goyim, Shelo Yaduucha. We're also the puzzle of Ma'aseh Yad HaTovim Bayam. Okay. I'll begin with this next part. This part for me is one of the most important Dvar Torahs and understandings of the entire Haggadah, of the entire, it's not really Haggadah part, it's a general Pesach part of understanding what's going on. And I'll preface it, if I could take a step back, there's a very nice thought that I try to say before Purim, understanding the story of Purim, understanding Haman, etc. And I'll talk about that briefly because it leads right into this idea. So I'll talk about that very shortly, and then we'll talk about the idea of Pesach. Anyways, we'll begin with a question. The question that fuels this whole point is that it seems to be there are many important aspects that we celebrate on the night of Pesach, or maybe the whole 8 days of Pesach. There's the going out of Mitzrayim, and there's the culmination, which is the Shira, which is the Kriyas Yam. So a lot of big things happened. And yet, what do you find to be the strictest, most chumer halachic aspect of Pesach? And that is the Isra of Chametz and the Chiva Matzah. Now, why do we do that? So what does it say? Because they went up b'chipazon. Chazal tells us, you know, they threw it on their backs, they booked out of there b'chipazon, they went out super fast, didn't have time to rise. So therefore, we do this. I'm saying this question bothers me a lot. Some people are less bothered by this question, which is okay. I'm using it to say the var, but I think it's a phenomenal question. The entire quote unquote lachat and focus and center of Pesach is matzah and matzah and matzah and no chametz and no chametz and no chametz. I'm brooding it. And there's a whole story that we're not really talking about. There's a whole focus that's not really getting mentioned. You know, the whole going out, you know, I don't know, maybe we should make a massive, the chiyuv should be intense fireworks. Or we should, I don't know, I'm saying like it was a crazy revelation. There's a lot of things that were going on that night. Maybe we should light a massive bonfire the night of Pesach, because we know through many sources, from the Zayar to the Vilna Gaon, to many people, it says there was the night shine like day. It was the night shine like day. The Rebbe Shalom was Megala himself with this fire of Gilu Hashchina that was like day. And even has some dinim of day based on the Paiskim. Because this, so maybe we should make a massive bonfire, and that should be the thing. You know, we have to take all the wood and make them. I'm saying, why are we focusing? We went out fast. We went out fast. Oh, only matzah. That's the thing. I think it's for me, it was a very important question, and obviously something that needs to be explored and understood. So, based on that question, let's take a few steps back. There's a famous idea that is a very old idea from, I don't know if it's from the Zohar, but it's definitely from the Kabbalah. It's a very old idea, which is that everything, obviously we know everything, we know the Staka Barayis Bar Alam, the Baruch Shalom created the world from the Torah, and everything in the world has a source in the Torah. But more importantly, the earlier that source is, the more relevant or important that thing is to the Bria. Meaning, let's say you have a certain concept, and that concept is found in the middle of the Torah. So that concept is averagely important in the scheme of the world. But if you find that concept is the shirish of that concept in the Torah, and the shirish of everything is in the Torah. So if the shirish of that concept in the Torah is in Bereishis, or let's say even in Sheishis Mei Bereishis, so that thing is obviously something of critical importance. And if it's in the first day, then it's maybe the most important thing, right? That's a famous idea. Spoken about many times. So I'm saying we find this many, many times, you know, by Sarsha Dibrais, and everything's in the Anachi, everything's in the Aleph. This concept comes up many times in various different forms. When the Gemara asks regarding the story of Purim, ask all these things. What's their source in the Torah? So on a base level, where's the Merumas to? I guess curiosity, I don't know, whatever. But in a deeper understanding, obviously the question is, what's their source? What's fueling that? What's the source of this, of the idea of Mordechai? What's the source of the idea of Esther? What's the source of the idea of Haman and what they represent? So the Gemara answers by Haman. It says Hamina Eitz. It says by the Eitz Hadas, Toivara. So the Rebbe Shlom comes to Adam Rishon and he asks him Hamina Eitz Achla. I'm not quoting the pasuk exactly. I don't have it in front of me, but he asks him, "Did you eat from the tree? Hamin Ha'Eitz? Did you eat from the tree?" And the Gemara says Hamin Hei Memnon. That's Haman. So we see that Haman's source is from an incredibly early source. And furthermore, we know that Haman signified or represented Amalek. So what's the understanding? So in a very quick, basic understanding, what happened when Adam Rishon ate from the Eitz Hadas was that we know that they're used that before, without getting deeply and trying to understand as much as I can, we'll just say the words that we know that before he did, there was two separate entities, called light and darkness, or called Tov and Ra, and the Ra was outside, whatever that means exactly, in the form of a serpent, of the Nachash, and the Tov was he himself was innately good. comes along this chitzonius power, coerces him to eat from this thing. He eats from this thing, and that negative power goes in him. It says at that moment he brought death to the world. That moment the Yetzirah went in him, it became a bilbul, it became a confusion, it became, now it's not everything is yes and no, not everything is black and white, everything is good or bad. In every good there's a little bit of bad, and every bad there's a little bit of good. And that's what the confusion that was created at the time of Adam HaRishon's first chait. And that's also part of the reason why he brought death in the world, because you can't have anything that's pure anymore, because that mixture that got there, it's not two separate forces, that thing gets confused together. And now even the purest of the pure, the biggest tzaddik in the entire world, Moshe Rabbeinu, whoever, the biggest tzaddik, he's not full, he needs to have death. There's automatically death, and that's because of the chait of Adam HaRishon, because that mixture, it's always there. It's never something that's purely good, never something that's purely bad. It doesn't exist anymore. So that's the understanding of the chait, that's the understanding of our position that we find ourselves in, of decisions, of unclarity, of debating things. It used to be when Adam HaRishon was himself and he was his own thought process, there wasn't debating. He knew by being innately and perfectly good what was good. And it wasn't any question, what's right, what should I do? All these types of things that we struggle with and we try to figure out. So fast forward. So again, you have this mixture. Yes, David.
So what Bechira was there?
I don't know why, if I mentioned earlier, my audio is not working. If you want to type it in the chat box and I'll see it on the side of my screen, your thoughts, I could put it on hold for a second. Take your time.
I'm trying to figure
while we're waiting.
I don't know why my audio is not working. The testing seems to show that it's working, but I'm interested to hear David's question and what I have to say.
What?
Anyone want to talk about anything while we're waiting? What Bechira?
What Bechira was there? You're talking about when Adam HaRishon was faced with the Nachash, what Bechira was there? That's a very good question. Most of this is out of my pay grade, but from my understanding is that Adam HaRishon, at the point when he was created, all he had to do basically was wait it out. He was created on Friday. He had to wait out till Shabbos. Once he would wait out till Shabbos, the Baruch Shalom's whole point. This is very intense stuff that's way beyond me. But in my very simple understanding, the Baruch Shalom created the world to be able to be mativ on a bria. Adam HaRishon was that bria that the Baruch Shalom wanted to be mativ for, meaning that the Baruch Shalom quote unquote made it, that you have to earn it. So therefore go to the world, be there, be good, don't mess up. And then I can give you a billion, you know, an unlimited amount of toiv because you quote unquote earned it or you did something by not messing up. That's what Adam HaRishon's point of creation was. Adam HaRishon was created and now he just had to wait it out. He just had to be good for those few hours, literally just a few hours. And then the world would have ended, and now Adam HaRishon would have gone to be nene meziv ha-shechina, be close to Hashem, and that would have been, quote unquote, the point of the Bria. Now that Adam HaRishon had this chait, now this world went through a takala and was damaged, and now the rest of the next 6,000 years is basically us repairing that, if that answers your question on some level. There's no such thing as not being good with clarity. You're right, but he had this external force. If the Nachash wouldn't have been there, then yes, he wouldn't have sinned. The Nachash came and his wife came and they together made him be over this. Why did he go ahead and do it if he was clear that it was a bad thing to do? I don't know. Well, part of what they say is that the Nachash's argument, or maybe even Chav's argument, was that he should be like a Kadosh Baruch Hu to know good and bad, meaning he was doing it from a good place of knowing what's good and bad. Okay, like I said, these are things that are well beyond my understanding, and That's not really the point of this conversation. Bezrat Hashem, when they're below my pay grade or within my pay grade, we'll revisit this this talk. And you should definitely have this conversation because these are all basic. This topic or this talk is a basic Jewish philosophy question. But I'm talking about a very simple level. Okay, so basically we had this confusion that was created, and that was what Ham represented. Ham represented the koach of Amalek. Koach of Amalek is the koach of Ra being confused with Tov, and the koach of Amalek is the antithesis of godliness. And that's how we explained when the whole world saw Kadosh Baruch Hu, like we said earlier, the whole world saw the Kriyas Yam Suf, and everyone, no one was going to touch Klal Yisrael because it was very clear that there was a God. It's very clear who that God favored. And it's very clear, you know, what happens if you go against that, meaning Mitzrayim. And yet, Amalek still, crazily, went against that because Amalek is the representation of that Nachash. It's a representation of Hamin Ha'etz, of that initial confusion. And that's what they represent. And they're suicidally against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're suicidally against the Toiv and the light. And that's why it says, Chazal tell us that kol zman, that there's a malik in the world, the Baruch Shalom's kisei is not going to be shalim. The Baruch Shalom's kisei can't be shalim if there's an existence of a malik. That's why we have a chiv to destroy a malik. And that's all these concepts of having this this antithesis to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this bilbul, this confusion, which is what Amalek is. Amalek, as we know famously, is gematria for suffix, confusion, bilbul, and that's what Amalek represents, and that's why when there's Amalek in the world, there can't be a shlemus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world. They are a stira, and that's why Amalek doesn't mind being suicidal against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because that's what it is. It is a stira. Anyways, moving along with this knowledge. When it comes to Mitzrayim and Yitzias Mitzrayim, so the Rebbe Shlomo is slowly building up this knowledge and this complete clarity of his memshala on the world, as everyone says that there was the idea klalis, and there was the knowledge that the Rebbe Shlomo was hashkacha klalis on the world, but then there's the hashkacha pratis that was being shown. There's hashkacha pratis on every aspect of the bria, etc. And then the Baruch Shem has Kriyas Yam Suf, which was his ultimate clarity. But more than that, by the night of Mitzrayim, it says many many times through many sources, as we've spoken about a few times, that there was this flash of Rebbe Shem revealing himself, and. We spoke about why it had to be like that. The Baruch Hashem had to show himself to pull Klal Yisrael out of these Memphis Shari Tumah, and that's why the Galus of Mitzrayim was unique. We spoke about that, but Lamaisa, when it says Ubemayir Gadol, the Baruch Hashem took Klal Yisrael out with a Mayir Gadol. The Baal Gadol says Zdu Gilui Hashchina. That was with a Gilui Hashchina, that there was this flash of Gilui Hashchina, and that's when the Baruch Hashem himself went. It says Aniv LeMalach Aniv LeStraf. The Baruch Hashem b'chvedi v'atzma went and destroyed Mitzrayim, the by Max Bucharis, and it says that's how he's mekadosh the Bucharim of Klal Yisrael, but lemaisa there was that flash of godliness, and it was at that moment when there's the birth of Klal Yisrael as a nation, took place at that moment, meaning that when you have this idea of Klal Yisrael connecting to the source. So then there's the idea of above time. Now, wait a second. I can't hear anyways, but what I'm saying is that when you're dealing with Haman or Amalek, and we're explaining that to mean this confusion of Tov and Ra, so that by definition means process. That means things take time. That means it's not all clarity. If you have clarity, then everything is there at the same time. And that's how, on a obviously a very simple level, without you asking me questions, how we understand the Baruch Shem, quote unquote, is above time. Because when you have the ultimate clarity by being the ultimate, meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then everything is there. Everything is there. There's no before and after and now. Everything is there because it's the ultimate clarity. It's the ultimate state of being, which is the ultimate clarity. That is way above time and above any process. the idea of process and time is an idea of this mixture of amalek, this mixture of the Yetzer Hara. That there's that now when I want to shtag, I have to do. When anything I have to do, I have to. It's a process and it takes time. But when you're connecting to Kadosh Baruch Hu, then you're trying to connect to above time. So this idea of Rabbi Shem took us out b'chipazayin. So that was the idea of us connecting to Kadosh Baruch Hu. And when we do something with the least time possible, then we're connecting to Kadosh Baruch Hu that much more, because the less time it takes, the more godly it is, because Rabbi Shem is the least time. Are you still raising? Is that a new raising hand of it? That's the old one.
No,
old one. Anyways, we find the pasuk tells us in Shemais Yud Beis Yud Zayin, Perkei Beis pasuk Yud Zayin. The pasuk tells us Ushmartem es hamatzos, that you have to guard the matzos. And Rashi over there says, and bring the chumash with me. It says basically you have to make sure that you take care of the matzahs. You have a chiyuv to eat matzah. You have to make sure it doesn't become chametz. And famously, Rashi tells us the idea that al tikri matzahs. You could also read it to mean shmartim asah mitzvahs. So you have to watch the mitzvahs. And that's the makar for zrizim. Or zrizus for mitzvahs, the idea that you have to do mitzvahs with zrizus. And if you make the correct connection of the pasuk, when it tells you shmatim es matzahs, when it tells you that you have to watch the matzahs, what happens if you don't? The pasuk tells you that it becomes chametz. Not that it's bad, not that it's like meaning it's okay, it's like second rate. No, it's puzzle, it's disaster. It's actually going from a big mitzvah to karis. That's a big difference. So shmatim es matzahs, watch the matzahs, because if not, you'll have karas. So meaning this is the way to do it, and that's not the way to do it. That's actually disaster. That's destruction. So in the pasuk, when Chazal are telling us that change matzahs to mitzvahs, that you have that you're supposed to do mitzvahs with zrizas, so the simple inference and connection is that this is the way to do mitzvahs. The proper way of doing mitzvahs is this way and only this way. But if you do mitzvahs without zrizas, if you do mitzvahs lazy and taking your time and going through this quote-unquote process, then maybe it's not even mitzvah. Maybe it's destruction. Maybe it's actually bad. And that's all part of the understanding of what we're saying. That if you have, and that's to me what the matzah signifies and symbolizes, the idea that we're trying as much as we can to connect again to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When there was that flash of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's when Klal Yisrael became connected as the Aman Nivchar. That was the point of creation as Klai, so as a nation, that was the point that we got connected to Kadosh Baruch Hu, and that it was at that moment that we became an Am that was able to connect to Nitzchi. What's Nitzchi? Foreverness. Foreverness is not a time, right? Whoever thinks, that's the only way we really could try to understand it as a very long time, but Nitzchi is really very simply above time. The concept of forever, you can't say it's a billion, trillion, billion, trillion, billion, trillion, because that's nothing. It's not even a measurement in forever, because forever is not even a billion times more. It's just a different concept. It's a different plane. So Klal Yisrael is unique at that point when the Rebbe Hashem showed himself that we connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we became the Am HaNivchar, we connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the ability to have nitzchias. If we do something right, if we do mitzvahs, if we do the Ratzon Hashem, we change the time that we're living in to be that death, that time that just disappears forever and is really just energy that we're expending to nothingness, to something that's actually forever, to nitzchias. And that's what we're basically representing, where we have the matzah. The matzah is our connection to Kadosh Baruch Hu, our connection to the musig, to the idea, to the concept of nitzchias, to foreverness, which is no time. And in this world that we live in, a world of time, then we have to try to make it the least time possible. We have to make matzah quickly. We have to go out b'chipazim. We have to do mitzvahs with zrizus. That's our attempt, quote unquote, to connection to nitzchias. And if you do the opposite, if you have the chametz, then what's the yitzhar referred to? Sa'ar shebi'isa. It's the chametz. It's that process. It's that time. That's what the Yetzer Hara is referred to. So Arsha B'Issa famously. I feel like I have one more connection to add to that. But anyways, that's what we're celebrating. We're celebrating the idea that we're connecting to Nitzchis. We're connecting to above time. We're connecting, when we eat that matzah, we're connecting to that the unique ability that we as Klal Yisrael have to be above time, to be l'mayil mi'azman. And now if we don't have to do that, meaning if we don't do the right things, if we take our time, then we're going to be just like the Goyim, and we're just going to use our energies to death and just fizzle away and not connect to that Nitzchis. But we have the opportunity and the ability, uniquely so, to connect to Nitzchis, to connect to above time. That's why we have that chiyuv of zrizus, of quick, of matzah, short time, of zrizus and mitzvahs, and not just, you know, kind of letting things go, not that bilbul of the Yetzer Hara, not the confusion and that time process and that slow confusion of the Yetzer Hara. And I give us all a bracha b'ez Hashem that when we eat the matzah, we should connect the Kadosh Baruch Hu to the highest source that we can. We should be mekayim the night of Emunah. It's the night of Emunah, which I'm still working on. I don't really understand why it's Emunah yet, because it's clarity. But Be'ez Hashem, maybe next year, I hope to give another share again.